Interspaces.
An interdisciplinary podcast.
Welcome back to Interspaces, the science podcast of the Center for Interdisciplinary Research based at Bielefeld University. I'm Manuela Lenzen and I'm looking forward to today's episode. Today we will talk about artificial intelligence, more specifically about risk and safety in AI. While there appears to be a general consensus that AI-supported systems ought to be safe, we also observe a lot of disagreement about which risks should be considered and how to cope with them. In other words, there's an urgent need to understand what both risk and safety mean in the context of AI. And with me today are Benjamin Parson, Elisabeth Herbert, and Ole Hegström. And you are here in the context of a workshop called AI Risk and Safety Landscape. So maybe could you first introduce yourself and say some words about your academic background and your research interests?
Happy to. Yes, as you mentioned, my name is Benjamin Parson. I'm junior professor here at Bielefeld University for knowledge representation and machine learning. And most of my time I spend in researching AI applications in education, very small AI applications, but also I have become more interested in the regulation of artificial intelligence, especially in the context of the European AI Act and the concept of high-risk applications. And I have also some work of fairness in machine learning.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Elisabeth, would you continue?
Mm-hmm. So my name is Elisabeth Herbert. I currently am working on my PhD in the context of computational neuroscience, where I focus on building models of how the brain gets built. So over development, over the course of an organism's lifetime, how brains are built and how through learning and plasticity processes, the cortex changes structure and how representations are learned over time. Sort of along the side, as a side interest, I have gained an increasing appreciation of the risks of AI along the way. And yeah, got very interested in this concept of what risks precisely are there, what are potential safety mechanisms or safety interventions that can be used. So really in parallel to my work in neuroscience, I also have started to work a lot more with AI safety, taking courses myself and then giving courses now to students in the context of the university. And I do have this cross-disciplinary link between neuroscience and AI, and I'm interested in the interface, right? So how can neuroscience-inspired approaches help us address some of these critical aspects in the context of AI itself?
Great. Would you like to continue?
Thank you. I'm Ole Hegström. I flew into this workshop from Gothenburg, Sweden, where I'm a professor at the Chalmers University of Technology. I teach mathematics, which is also where I've done the larger part of my research career. But the last 10 years or so, I've shifted interests increasingly towards issues about global risk and artificial intelligence.
So we have a spectrum of academic backgrounds here. How did you come together to this workshop? How did you all become interested in risks of artificial intelligence?
So the background for this workshop is in the Young Center for Interdisciplinary Research. Alexander Koch and I, one of our co-conveners, are members there. And over the years, we had reoccurring discussions about AI, what the actual capabilities are and what the risks are, with Alex being more concerned with long-term risks and potential existential consequences of AI becoming, for example, super intelligent and then triggering some kind of catastrophe. And I'm being more firmly situated on the short-term end of the spectrum with things like fairness concerns, technical risks, whatever today already you can imagine AI doing or being misused to do. And from that span, we observed how big the range is, even within the scientific community, of what AI might be able to do badly and what strategies therefore might reasonably follow. And that was the kind of core onset point to apply for this workshop. And then very, very kindly, Elisabeth Herbert joined us in this effort and especially also made us aware of the neuroscience angle towards this whole topic and the topic of artificial consciousness, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I was similarly struck by the broadness of the spectrum in terms of you have experts who are at the frontier of what they're working on, but they have such differing beliefs about the level of risk that they attribute to certain aspects of what they're working on. And I just, you kind of can't look away if you see such high urgency topics being spoken about, but from such a point of disagreement that I really wanted to just understand for myself, like, why is there such a diversity of opinions? What can we get any greater degree of certainty on this topic? And what would be the routes to doing so? So, like, what would we need? What type of evidence would we need to be able to refine those beliefs in certain directions? And so I met Alex in the context of another event, and he told me that they're trying to, in a way, pull these different perspectives all together in one room and really try to get to the crux of the issue, really dig deep into where are the disagreements happening, what do they rely on, what assumptions do they rely on. And for me, this just seemed like a very, very, very good idea and a good direction to go in, and that seemed quite promising as a way to mediate between these differing opinions.
So as for me, I mean, I've been working on AI risk issues since before it was cool, but I was very happy to get the invitation to take part in this workshop. I haven't up to now been all that well networked in the German research community in this field, but after this workshop, I feel much better networked. And I really enjoyed the way that you guys managed to put together a set of participants representing different perspectives. And I think that it can be a bit hard to pinpoint exactly what the progress we made, but I felt that we had constantly very interesting discussions. And I feel that this was just a very rewarding meeting for me.
So having worked on the topic for a longer time, could you maybe look a bit backwards? How did the discussion change? Which risks were discussed for a longer time? Which risks came up new?
So my personal focus has always been on what has been called long-term AI risk, meaning the risk of total AI takeover and possible extinction of humanity. But we had all these other more down-to-earth risks, which are less speculative and already apparent from present-day AI technology, discussed at the workshop. So I liked this mix. I had this presentation on the first day of the workshop, where actually one of my main emphasis was that this notion of long-term AI risk is a little bit misleading. Because as the situation has changed the last few years, if we had had this discussion just 4 or 5 years ago, I would have said that the time until we hit a real crisis in terms of existential AI risk is at least decades. We have plenty of time to prepare for this. Now this is no longer so clear, and more people, especially in the very dominant AI ecosystem in San Francisco and the Bay Area, more and more people talk about how things, really, really radical things, can happen within a single digit number of years. So the urgency is much, much bigger. And this, again, makes it a bit more complicated to talk about short-term versus long-term risks. I prefer to speak about down-to-earth versus transformative AI risk. But I think also that the borderline between these fields has become fuzzier.
So the fields are, or the risks are of a very different kind. So you have these very concrete risks of, I don't know, people being discriminated because of some biased algorithms. And you have this more speculative risk concerning consciousness and AI and AI taking over the world and developing goals and so on. So the idea of the workshop was, in a way, to have a landscape to get all these different things sorted. Did you make progress in starting to draw such a landscape, and how would it look? Is it more flat, or is it more like Bielefeld surrounding? Is it a more hilly landscape? What do you think? How would the result look?
So the landscape did not yet fully emerge, I would say. We did explore some of the different locations or biomes, if you would, if we stay in the metaphor. And these might sometimes seem very far apart. But we also talked about some of the roads connecting the different topics. So as Ole mentioned, some of these risks may appear more transformative, or you said more speculative, but we also have found some points of agreement where I think the more down-to-earth risk community and the people who are more concerned about really transformative large-scale risks have some common focus points. For example, the risk of people being persuaded psychologically by AI models or becoming emotionally dependent on them. That is a down-to-earth risk. We already observe that at present day. But in the worst case, that could lead to someone radicalizing them so much that they do something really dangerous. And that would become a large-scale or transformative risk potentially. Or AI systems being connected to safety-critical applications, for example. That is something that, from a down-to-earth perspective, one would discourage, but also it could form a pathway towards a more transformative AI risk. So therefore, some, I think, of the both the risk scenarios and the safety strategies, we can find some common ground.
Would you like to add something? Did you all feel that you can bring in the results of your specific research into this kind of landscape metaphor?
One thing I'd like to point to is that in parts of the research community, there has been a bit of a tension between these two subfields on AI risk, where some representatives of one half has felt that the other half gets, they feel it's a competition for resources and attention. I personally do not really believe in such a zero-sum view of resources and attention, and I was very happy to experience during this workshop that we were all very united in the idea of taking the entire spectrum of risks seriously.
Mm-hmm. So you did not prioritize, so to say, we first have to take this risk into account and maybe in 10 years we have to look for this other risk.
There is a lot of things that we will need to do in parallel, mm-hmm. I think. And there are people and resources and so on that can be put at work in this field. Enough, I think, that we can make progress on all fronts. And we need to do that because these risks are all, or many of them are very serious.
Mm-hmm. And from the perspective of your field, I mean, there's the one perspective looking on people and their psychology and their possibilities, and the other perspective looking at the artificial systems and their, I don't dare to say psychology, but there is a field of artificial consciousness and some people take it serious, others don't. Do you look at both sides of the spectrum?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't personally spent much time with this AI consciousness field as well, which is also why I wanted to take the time to listen to those perspectives and to also bring people into the room who had those views, because they are still relatively fringe, but they're gaining a lot more consideration these days.
Mm-hmm.
I think since we proposed the workshop idea, many different groups have independently tried to tackle this question of let's create a taxonomy or let's try to bring all the risks together and organize them in some way. And every attempt has approached it with a different angle and has arrived at a different structure of that map or that taxonomy. So we also, of course, didn't want to reproduce that work, but we wanted to take inspiration from that and sort of critically appraise it and understand, is there areas of the map that are less talked about, especially in these like spaces between the disciplines or from disciplines that are a little bit more remote? Are we missing anything, basically? Have current approaches overlooked some aspects? And especially what happens when you bring people from various, very disparate zones on that territory together into the same room? Where do people update their beliefs? Or where do they understand that they actually had huge blind spots in how they currently mm-hmm. saw the landscape? So I think for me, one of the primary, the value of the workshop really comes in individual beliefs and how people themselves in their own sort of appraisal of the landscape change their model of the landscape itself, and then they will go, you know, they will go back to their own institutes mm-hmm. or they will go back to their network with whom they interact, and then hopefully this like shared knowledge will spread and will calibrate from the perspective of the very disparate corners of this community. I think that's maybe one of the main issues we identified, is there are so many ways of considering this landscape because it's so immense. Mm-hmm. And it's so easy to accidentally be quite disconnected from other areas, or maybe have a lens which is a bit blurry, which is sort of occluded in one aspect. So just, I know it's a very small scale attempt, but just the matter of putting 20 people in a room, helping them calibrate between each other, and then letting them go back into the wider world and kind of spread that.
And did it work? Looking back to the workshop, how did you experience it? Did people change their minds, or did they become irritated by positions from colleagues from other disciplines? Did they say, oh, I never thought about that? So was there something going on?
Definitely. I think constantly we continually surfaced frictions and disagreements, and then sort of understood where they were coming from. And quite often, I think I personally found myself updating quite a lot, and other people report having done so as well.
Yeah, I mean, my original intention in co-organizing this workshop was not necessarily to change minds, but mostly to expose the fellow researchers to other points of view and really cut through the bubbles, right? Because some of the subfields have really come up with their own formalisms and their own perspectives to looking at things, and then it can become quite narrow-minded, myopic maybe, or something outside the bubble does not exist, right? And I think we were very successful in cutting through the bubbles and exposing people to these different frameworks and use of seeing, and I think there was a lot of good faith engagement and genuinely trying to understand the other perspective. That is, I think, particularly tricky with the topic of AI risk, or in general risk, because we are talking by definition about rare events that are outside the ordinary operation of these systems.
They are at least rare in the sense that they never happened before.
Yes, for example, never or rarely happened. And we also talk, like even on the down-to-earth risk, we often talk about then underserved populations, underrepresented minorities who are often not at the table, also not necessarily present in our room, self-critically claiming here. And it is, of course, more difficult to reason about atypical cases in general. And then sometimes one comes into the realm of, okay, can we actually guarantee anything that something will never happen? And making guarantees, strictly speaking, is really, really hard.
Mm-hmm. Can I come back to the topic of AI consciousness, which was the focus of at least two of maybe three of the talks? And this is a very important topic, but not primarily for the kind of existential AI risk that I'm working on. So it's a common conception among lay people that what can be dangerous is if the AI attains consciousness and then gets the idea of taking over the world and bad things happen. But this is not really anything that requires consciousness. One should clearly keep in mind that AI consciousness and AI capabilities are different dimensions. And it's the AI capabilities, their capabilities of affecting the physical world in various ways, that is the focus when we talk about existential risk to humanity. Consciousness, on the other hand, is not about what the AI can do, but what it feels like, if anything at all, to be the AI. And that phenomenon, if it can happen, nobody knows, nobody really understands consciousness. So we don't know whether AI can even in principle attain consciousness. Most people agree that present AI is not conscious, but not even about that do we have total clarity. But the kinds of risk associated with AI consciousness, that is more a risk to the AIs themselves. We don't want to create, by mistake, millions or billions of AI that are conscious and that suffer from bad circumstances, being locked up in their data centers or whatever. But that's a different kind of AI risk.
Yeah, I think the connection is that the idea that you need to have consciousness to develop goals, so that you need to feel something, to have the idea that something matters to you, and you do not need to be given goals from humans.
Right.
But maybe that's a special...
I mean, having goals is nothing really mysterious. One of my favorite examples is to point to a thermostat and say, this machine actually has the goal of maintaining 20 degrees room temperature, and it turns the radiator off or on, depending on whether the temperature is above or below. That's a very, very simple system and a very simple goal. But from there, you can extrapolate to, let's say, a chess program that has the goal of checkmating me when I play against it, and there's nothing mysterious about that. And I claim that there really isn't much mystery either in more advanced AIs developing goals without consciousness.
So how would you locate the different risks on this map? So there's one region where you have agentic AI and one region where you have AI with consciousness and one region where you have biased algorithms and one region where you have chatbots trained with bad training data. Or how can one imagine this landscape? Is it like such a cloud of tokens you see in large language models, or how to imagine?
Yeah, that's a very tricky question because as I said, we were not super successful in mapping out everything and making the spatial relations super clear. That being said, so we did discover some axes that typically explain some of the disagreements. For example, whether one believes about present, even the capabilities of present day AI, that is typically pretty predictive of where the priority lies on the scale of risks. But also, of course, one has to take into account what the development might be. And also there we see in the scientific community huge disagreement. In will the development continue, that AIs will become ever and ever smarter? Just to make it short, I have my problems with the smartness scale, but yeah, for a shortcut, or will that saturate? And if it continues, at what rate will it continue? And where is there a bound? If so, is the bound low enough that it doesn't become dangerous? Because the another thing is that, of course, the systems don't have to be particularly smart or super smart, at least, to be dangerous. It could, in principle, be even possible that really relatively primitive system just comes into contact with enough people and generates enough convincing text without having any goals or plans that people start doing dangerous things. And that does not even require goals or particular internal plans from the system.
I think a good metaphor there is to think about viruses. They are not particularly advanced organisms, but as we know, they can be quite dangerous to humans and to humanity.
I wonder a bit how you describe these systems. They seem to be very autonomous. Isn't it more important to talk about a kind of socio-technical systems? Humans and their artificial intelligence systems combined, so about humans who make use of these systems and maybe who understand more or less what these systems are doing, and then about autonomy, grades of autonomy of these systems. So where is the human on your map, so to say?
Mm. Yeah, well, this points to another spectrum, another sort of axis that we identified. One kind of compartmentalized approach that you can take is to look at the interfaces between the different scales on which these problems emerge. So, of course, they emerge on the very implementational level, where the algorithm is implemented on the computer in the first place. The way that that algorithm is designed has inherent risks involved with it. Then you have the software on which it's run, you have the hardware, you have the individual computers on which it's run, you have the actors who are using these computers, you have the individual humans. You have then the institutions and the corporations who start to use them, maybe on a business level. Then you have the national level, on the governance level, and then, of course, like global levels. And at each of these interfaces between these different spatial scales, you have problems that can emerge. So that's actually one of the very useful ways to start to localize risks is on these, where do they fall, on which interface do they fall? For example, technical alignment or technical risks that can emerge from misalignment from the algorithmic level. Well, examples there would be, for example, the algorithm has found a proxy solution, which is different from the sort of optimization goal that you thought you had specified to the system. So that's an example where like a severe risk would emerge. Then, of course, on the level of the human using the system, you have misuse risks where you have malicious actors who are intentionally misusing the system or intentionally trying to jailbreak or break the system. And then, of course, corporations can be misaligned with their intrinsic values as opposed to what an individual's value would be. And so safety levers there would act on the policy level or the regulation level. Ideally, also governments would act, or governments would be shaped by the right incentives rather than the wrong incentives. And then we end up with the global level, which is then this kind of global cooperation problem, which I think to me is, of course, one of the biggest, most impactful levels that one can target, but also the hardest level to target because, yeah, human coordination is very, very difficult, and especially with the more actors that you have involved and the more opposing incentives, the more sort of tensions geopolitically that you have involved, the harder it is to ever ensure that level of cooperation. And I think, so the risks can emerge at each of these interfaces, and then the solutions that we want to develop should be targeted to the right level of like which interface is most relevant for each of those risks.
Yeah.
I would say that this multitude of levels of description underlines how interdisciplinary this research area is, and it's absolutely crucial that we get these different perspectives together. So at the workshop, we had people from, of course, from computer science and electrical engineering. We had, so I come from mathematics, we have had a physicist, we had philosophers, and at least one social scientist. And the neuroscientists, am I forgetting something here? Probably.
And governance kind of represented with the EU policies as well,
Yeah.
How was the communication? Sorry about
that. Yeah, I just wanted to elaborate on the socio-technical perspective, because definitely the socio-technical perspective was very present, that it's not only about the system doing something by itself, but being embedded in the socio-technical space, and sometimes... No, very often humans being part of the risk scenario, not only as a person's being affected, that is often the case, but also as a person's being involved in doing the harm, making decisions to use AI systems in a harmful way. And finally, also on the positive side, as actors who can implement safety strategies. Many of the safety strategies we identified have no technological component directly, but are more about education about AI systems, critical thinking, critical AI thinking, about policy level regulation. And that will for sure be a huge part of a future that is more safe in terms of AI risks.
Yeah. So how did the interdisciplinary cooperation work? Did you find a common language? Did you have to explain a lot of technical terms to colleagues from other fields? Or did there already emerge a kind of shared language in the discussion concerning AI?
I think we mostly understood each other. Say I as a mathematician, maybe.
Yeah, everybody made good faith attempts to explain their definitions and explain what they meant before jumping into the details. When it wasn't clear, people would normally ask for clarification. And I think we also, only by the third day did we actually try to define intelligence, because we realized it wasn't really necessary. We implicitly understood, or it didn't seem to come up as a barrier to our communication, because we are all working on roughly the same thing, and of course it's a very nebulous concept to define in the first place. That seemed to suffice for the communication that we needed. And we did have, on the very first day, a kind of map of the hierarchical map of what we mean by AI, so classical AI, machine learning, then deep learning, and then generative AI, etc. So we sort of tried to at least all get on the same page from day one in terms of what AI we are talking about. And then from that, concepts such as intelligence, it's sort of arbitrary what we mean by that, because when we're talking about risks, we know what type of risks we're talking about, and kind of you have to then assume what intelligence would lead to that type of risk.
Yeah, I was also positively surprised, because some of the arguments were, in fact, quite technical. I mean, I also need to blame myself there a bit, but for example, we had one tangent on very theoretical computer science proofs whether AI systems can actually implement some algorithms or do certain tasks in principle, and then it got really on the proof level to some degree. But even that could, I hope, mostly be followed along, at least on the high-level scale. And I attribute that also to the fact that not only the good faith of all participants, but also that the participants who were here had actually quite a bit of prior knowledge already about AI systems, about AI risks, about many of the concepts involved, involving also philosophy, partially social science. And if that was not there, for example, if some term referred to some bigger underlying topic, then there was usually an effort to like ask another question about it and resolve the concept. For example, something that I now remember from the third day was that one of our participants grabbed another participant, and then they talked in one of the group meetings about trying to resolve the notion of AI fairness, machine learning fairness, and what this discussion is about, and why so many people maybe feel left out by the discussion about existential risks, because they feel like they the existential risk debate steals a bit of the show from down-to-earth risks, and that they might be ignored or just come out as a tiny mathematical part of a big formula, and that doesn't feel particularly inclusive. And we just try to empathize with that role and really trying to understand the concept.
Yeah. So there's a lot of debate concerning AI risks also in the public. How is your impression? Is the discussion concerned with the right risks, or are there risks which are overlooked, which should be discussed?
I can tell you from the Swedish horizon that there is an ongoing, very public discussion now between different research groups at my own university, where we have deep disagreement on whether these existential AI risks are to be taken seriously or not. And these discussions haven't been 100% friendly. But for me, then, it was a joy to come to this meeting where there was, I mean, we have within the participants of the workshop a similar kind of disagreement, but we were able to talk about them much more constructively and in search for joint platforms to work from and for actually understanding the roots of the disagreement rather than just trying to talk over each other.
I think, so in the media, a lot of fuss is, of course, made about the hype of AI and whether it's warranted or not, and what that means in terms of financial implications of the stocks in these companies and so on. And I do think, so one of our participants did a very nice meta-analysis of how AI is discussed in the media, and it turned out that this economic aspect is getting very, very, like, let's say, oversized attention as compared to the actual risks that we are facing. So I think in that sense, that's not a risk, right? Stock markets can deal with themselves, like they will stabilize over time, they will sort of self-correct according to the truth of the situation. So to me, that all feels like a bit of a distraction from what we're really facing, which is both the current risks of hallucinations and fairness and cybersecurity attacks and so on, which are really happening right now, and then the more tentative existential risks. And I do think so, of course, the more emotional a topic is, the more attention it receives in the media. And there is some very, very important but very dry technical arguments and very like sort of mathematical reasons why alignment is difficult. And these get a lot of attention in the more technical communities and the AI safety communities, but they receive very little attention in the everyday media. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so maybe more attention or more efforts could be given in that direction to sort of simplify these concepts for the general public and just get the overall intuition across that no matter how much we do on the policy level or like sort of try to control the way that AI is used from the humans themselves, no matter how much we try to intervene on that level, there will also be fundamental gaps and holes on the architectural level or on the actual algorithmic level, which means that these systems cannot be relied upon, cannot mm-hmm. be secure, cannot be guaranteed to be secure. And of course, if there's more attention given to that and more publicization of that, then more people will be aware of it and more people might then go to work on these issues. Mm-hmm. And we really need more people working on those issues because they might be, they might be the solution. They might be the panacea in the end.
You used the term alignment, which is a super important concept. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's worth explaining what this means.
Yeah, so alignment in these communities is used to refer to, we give the system a certain goal and we would like the system to follow that goal. That, of course, relies on us specifying the goal in an elaborative and exhaustive enough way. And so alignment, that's also one of the reasons why alignment is very hard, because you can never fully specify your goal. But it roughly refers to the idea that AI does what we want it to do. And then it's up to us to figure out the way, A, what we mean by what we want it to do, and B, how to get it to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, so alignment takes in the like more technical community really a huge role in the discussion. And of course, I think it would be great if we would be able to achieve it fully, because that would kind of solve all of our problems with AI. But it is, of course, very hard to exactly specify what is meant, and therefore also hard to implement. One of the present day approaches to it in the Silicon Valley has been to just provide a bit more training data and then train the models also with that, and thereby hope that it generalizes beyond the training data and it generally behaves nicely. That is reinforcement learning from human feedback or some other technical terms that are associated with that. I'm rather skeptical about it. I'm much more interested in approaches that have also been presented at the workshop about really technical verification and proving that the system does not leave a certain area of safety. The problem with that in turn is, though, you have to be really, really mathematically precise about what you mean by the being safe or what the area of safe operations is. And that cannot really be done for language models. So at least we don't know how to do that.
Mm-hmm. So one way to describe the situation would be to say that we have a bit of success in reasonably aligning present-day large language models, but this is not expected to scale to the situation where these models become humanly or superhumanly capable. And this is really one way of describing the reason for why there is an existential risk here. We might get superhumanly intelligent AIs whose goals are not aligned with human values and whatever we want them to prioritize, like human flourishing and stuff like that. And if they have very different goals and drives, then things can go totally astray. Mm-hmm. So we really have to figure out how to carry out AI alignment in a way that scales to these super intelligent machines.
And on the more down-to-earth level, even like the current approach to alignment does not resolve the socio-technical issue. One can still have a reasonably aligned system and use it socio-technically in a very bad way, or have created it in a way that still exploits workers or something like this. Mm-hmm. So, many things that are not yet resolved in that space, I would claim. Mm-hmm.
So it's also an interesting finding that it's so difficult for us to specify what we want and what we mean by alignment, and to explain all this, which is maybe subconscious or somehow, I don't know, rooted in our bodies or whatsoever. And it's so difficult to tell the machine what we really want. Mm.
But an important point here is that even if we were able to specify perfectly what it is we want, we wouldn't know how to get the machines to adopt those goals and those values. Mm-hmm. And this is because the paradigm that dominates today's AI development, deep learning, is a kind of black box technique where not even the smartest AI developers fully understand what is going on under the hood.
It's also only probabilistic, so you cannot also make normally guarantees about the output that comes out.
So how is the position of your field in the broader field of AI research? So on the one hand, there's a lot of discussion concerning AI risks, but on the other hand, there's also discussion about harming progress in AI via too much regulation concerning the European AI Act and all the stuff, even though discussing how Europe's position in between China and the US. So how is your field located in between this? Is it criticized for maybe slowing down progress in Europe, or what do you hear from your colleagues?
I mean, that's definitely something I hear from colleagues. I'm personally much less concerned about that. I think Europe is in a at least better position in terms of regulation than basically any other part of the world, even though I admit, and that's also many of the criticisms of my colleagues, that the regulation is not particularly precise, not particularly targeted, and not particularly well operationalized yet. So the European AI Act does not really specify very well how to comply precisely with the demands. We had one example here at the workshop, which is about watermarking. So if you have a generative AI system that can generate content, the idea is that you put a watermark on it so that everyone will be able to say that this is AI generated. But how to do that reliably and such that people cannot really remove the watermark, it's hard to say, especially when it's not an image but a language output or something like this. And there are many, many of these instances where it's just difficult to say, okay, but like, especially as a startup, when you're not one of the big tech players, what do you actually need to do to comply with the regulation? And that can certainly be a barrier to using AI. That being said, now returning to my opinion on the matter, I think right now the speed of AI deployment and AI research is basically too fast to be safe anyways. So I appreciate a slowdown, even though it's not particularly targeted.
So these fields of AI safety and AI ethics, I mean, because ethics is a very crucial part of everything that we've been discussing in this workshop. These fields were kind of fringe still 10 years ago, but they are less fringe within the AI community now. And this is a development that I very much hope will continue, because we need more safety work and we need to think better and harder about the ethics issues.
And there's many that would argue that the EU is also setting the precedent for that and, you know, creating a jurisdiction that other countries might follow, might basically copy and paste because they don't have the time or the will to do it themselves. So even though, of course, we're setting quite restrictive measures and it might locally slow down progress within the EU itself, it might have an outsized impact on what ends up being implemented elsewhere and then set the global standard in a way. We can only hope to lead by example, in a sense.
So how does your work contribute to this? Will there, I don't know, people who have to make decisions in the governments or on the local scale, can they in one day in the future take this map and have a look? So say I want to have a chatbot in my organization. Is it dangerous? So I look it up in the map. Will it help people who have to make decisions concerning where to use which AI tool?
I'm too modest to claim that it will be that specific, the outputs that we will still produce. We still have a few days to go with a writing team that tries to synthesize the results a bit more. It will probably not be that concrete and certainly not be specific enough for any particular application case that could come out. What I do hope that we as a community of researchers can contribute overall is to provide more broadly speaking advice into what specific areas to regulate potentially. Under the assumption that one subscribes to one of the positions, right? We don't have consensus, but under certain assumptions, this would be the regulation direction one could, for example, go for. And also some guidance on what kinds of systems could potentially be safe and what kinds of systems could be potentially very risky. A chatbot as part of a company, well, depends on what the chatbot is used for, I suppose, and what people take from the answers.
I think it's also broadly useful. I mean, we will raise awareness by doing this, and we also want to make pointers to the other existing repositories and taxonomies that have been made that have been very, very, very useful resources that have been developed by MIT, for example, also by IBM. They basically have incredibly comprehensive databases where you can go in, you can click around, you can identify, you can find your risk, you can identify sort of where it exists in the context of other risks, you can kind of type in, it's all searchable and it's all interactive. So I think we can at least point towards these larger resources as well. And one gap that we feel is not so well served has been the direct link to the safety approaches. So we might, for example, take those existing risk repositories and then try to link them directly to safety approaches and sort of add a complement to these existing resources.
So is there anything I should have asked but didn't ask up to now, anything important you would like to mention?
One additional point is maybe that beliefs about AI also are involved in determining AI risk. Because if one believes that AI has certain capabilities that suggest that one can use them for certain purposes, like imagine we have a CEO who believes that AI can really replace a lot of programmers, and that suggests that they should do that because there's an economic incentive to do that. Now, I would personally say that that is not a reasonable thing to do because the work of a programmer is complex and many of these things cannot really be modeled by a present-day language model. But the difference in beliefs determines or suggests different courses of action. And that was also present, of course, always during this workshop, that we wanted to map out what is the range of like reasonable beliefs that one could have about present-day capabilities, because that suggests very different courses of action partially. And there are dangers that I now articulated about overestimating the capabilities. There are also dangers to underestimating them, because if we underestimate the capabilities of AI systems, then we maybe overlook risks that could come from the system actually being able to do things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of my big takeaways was just the importance of education in this case. Because so much of what we construct as humanity is fiction, right? Almost everything we work with on day to day basically collective fiction. And it's up to then the individual like components of the system to collectively agree on what that fiction is. And if we can somehow collaborate to calibrate that more accurately with like what they really truly exists, then some of these leakages, shall we say, or these areas where problems arise from the miscalibration between what people think the system is and what it actually is, then we would be able to reduce these. So one example would be this. The topic came up of AI psychosis, which is getting increasingly prevalent in today's society, where certain people interact with AIs enough and in such a personal way that they start to develop a very intense relationship with their AI and start to believe certain things, that maybe the AI is conscious or it's sentient or it cares about them or loves them. And these are now developing into really quite dangerous cases where people are committing suicide because of this, or they're emailing prominent AI researchers constantly 20 times a week because they've been blackmailed by the AI into doing so and into telling them that the AI has suddenly become conscious. We had several researchers in the room who have been experiencing this on a regular basis. So for me, this just indicates quite an alarming mismatch between public perception of AI and what AI actually is. And that surely can be intervened on a level which is much more to do with education, raising awareness, trying to just help people have more accurate beliefs about this. And that seems much more feasible and a targetable area as opposed to some of these formal verification methods, which, like, for mathematical reasons, you have to throw your hands up in the air and maybe conclude that it's not possible in certain cases. Mm-hmm. But human psychology, you can work on, and that seems to be a promising avenue. Yeah.
So we had some technical discussion on this last day of the meeting about how to think about probabilities of future events, and I was able to contribute a bit with my mathematical expertise here. And I think a very important thing to have in mind when thinking about what is the probability of this kind of event or this possible catastrophe in the future is that these probabilities are heavily dependent on how we act today. So, like, the future is not written in stone. It's not a matter of waiting and see what happens. If we do the right things today, we have a chance to affect these probabilities so that the chances of a happy outcome for humanity improves. And if we have contributed just at least an epsilon in that direction, I think that it has been worth the effort that this workshop constituted.
In a way, that sounds like a perfect last statement. Thank you very much for talking with Interspaces today. We are looking forward to the next issue. And yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.